From PRI, Public Radio International. Welcome to Dialogue, a program that explores the world of ideas and issues in national and international affairs, history, and culture. I'm George Liston, C.A. My guest today is Wilson Center Fellow Enrico Mario Santi, Professor of Spanish and Latin American Literature at Georgetown University. You are looking into his poetry, his essays, and his intellectual context. Mm-hmm. You're doing it comprehensively, and I think that's important for our listeners to understand, because he's been written about quite a lot. So let me just ask you provocatively, you know, why are you undertaking this major comprehensive study of Octavio Paz?
Well, I think that why do people undertake studies of any kind? I think that in my case, it responds to the fact that there are so many studies on Paz, and yet they have been so fragmented. Paz's work is immense. This is someone who has been writing since the early 30s, so that's going to be on 60 years of constant production. He's been writing poetry, he's been writing essays, he's been granting interviews, lately he's been doing some television. Oh, really? in Mexico. Uh-huh. And that he is a major figure. Just to let you see the dimensions of his current popularity in Mexico, not too long ago, they did a survey of public opinion in Mexico. And this was immediately after Paz had been asked to do a series of commentaries on television in the nightly news. More or less someone like this journalist who appears with Tom Brokaw, what's his name, John Chancellor.
Yes.
The current events would take place, and then this was in the mid-70s when this happened, and Paz would be asked to give about a 5-minute rundown on the events. Immediately after that, they did a survey, and they asked, well, what major figures in Mexico do you believe the most? And they had, of course, they had in the running people like the president of Mexico, like the secretary of state, a couple of labor leaders. But the one who won above all of them was Octavio Paz. That is to say, a poet who was giving commentary in the news and an analysis of the news and the events and so forth. Not only did they ask him who they watched the most, that is to say, the survey asked that, but also who they trusted the most. That is to say, someone who was detached sufficiently from the centers of power so that his opinion would become reliable.
Uh-huh. In that marvelous answer, and I mean that, marvelously eloquent, I saw all kinds of reasons for your comprehensive book on him. I mean, because his view of poetry and lyric is comprehensive. It's life, really, mm-hmm. brought into the poetic expression.
Yeah. Well, it has to be comprehensive, I feel, not only because of the fragmentation in what has been done about him. There are books about the early past, the middle past, the late past. there's books about Paz's relationship to surrealism, Paz's relationship to government, Paz's political views. But there is no one book that takes everything right into account. So for the past 10 years, I've been attempting to study this systematically from Paz's origins during the 1920s in Mexico, mm-hmm. tracing his trajectory through different intellectual mm-hmm. contexts during the 1940s in the United States, during the late 1940s and early 50s in mm-hmm. Europe, during the 50s back in Mexico, during the 60s in India, and during the 70s back in Mexico, mm-hmm. Latin America, and in the rest of the world.
It seems to me that periods and places are fundamental to understanding this
man. Absolutely. More or less, this would be a rundown of my book, mm-hmm. because my book is arranged chronologically, and it takes as its structure the structure of Paz's trajectory.
You know, Enrico, it occurs to me that maybe one way of getting to understand this man better is to go into the major creative periods of his life, beginning with his birth in his early years in Mexico City.
The importance of displacement and traveling through spaces, different spaces and different contexts for Paz Of course, George is very important, and in that it is in fact so important that I have decided to structure my book around precisely these displacements in time and in space. Bas, as we have discussed, and as everybody knows, is not only a poet but has also been a diplomat, has been in the government service, Mexican foreign service, is an international figure, is known the world over, and he's also, moreover, someone who is in touch with different cultures, different contexts, different aesthetic schools, philosophical and intellectual currents, so that it is he would be the antithesis of the provincial intellectual, and as a result of that, he is traveling constantly. He has been traveling, in fact, since he was a child, born in 1914 in Mexico City. At the age of three, left Mexico with his parents to El Paso, Texas, because his father, who was Emiliano Zapata's secretary, Emiliano Zapata being the Mexican revolutionary, one of the leaders of the Mexican Revolution, had to take exile in Texas and later on in Los Angeles for 3 years. So no sooner was Paz born than at the age of three, he left Mexico for the United States.
But of course, those are extraordinary years in Mexico, the years of the revolution, extremely bloodthirsty. This is, I gather, a politically engaged family then?
Definitely, definitely. We have here a family that is not only politically engaged, but it's also politically conflictual. It's interesting that you asked that precisely because Paz's father, as we have said, is a very prominent leader in the Zapatista faction of the Mexican Revolution. But the father of Paz's father, that is to say Paz's grandfather, however, was a very prominent Porfirista intellectual, Porfirio Díaz being, of course, the dictator who ruled Mexico for 35 years and whom the Mexican revolutionaries overthrew. So that Paz, from a very early age on, became a child of this political conflict.
Was Octavio Paz, in this childhood phase, with these powerful political currents swirling around him, was he first of all creating then, and if so, to what extent, if any, was this reflected in what he was doing or thinking about even then?
Well, yes. Paz begins to publish properly at the age of about 16 or 17. Some of his earliest poems appeared then in little magazines that were published in the in Mexico City as part of the institutes, that is to say the secondary schools that he attended. He was part of literary groups, intellectual groups that were formed at the time, and he did not hesitate to publish both prose and poetry. And the poetry that he was writing then was really a love poetry or sentimental poetry that really did not reflect these other political and social preoccupations that were not only on his mind but in the minds of all of his peers in his own generation. This is one of the interesting things about Paz. The one of the central concepts in his work, and in fact of his thought, is that politics has its own genre. There are political genres, such as, for example, the essay, the pamphlet, the political treatise, the speech, the lecture, etc. But poetry, it best be left on its own. That is to say, poetry is something else that does not lend itself readily to political harangue. This, by the way, would be something that would be very different from the way that someone like Neruda, for example, would approach the subject of poetry. Neruda, or at least the one of the styles that Neruda practiced and for which he was known, was in fact the political poet. The political poetry that Neruda practiced from 1936 to about 1956, 1957, was one at the service of certain causes, and Neruda, being a communist, of course, was very much engaged with the political struggle of the Communist Party.
And would reflect it in his poetry.
And was reflected in his
poetry. But Paz,
I have the sense that Paz felt a strong sense of political responsibility, but said you express this differently. You do not
exactly.
put it in your poetry.
Exactly. This is one of the interesting things, one of the interesting differences between these two men. In Neruda, there is a total coincidence between political engagement mm-hmm. and literary practice or poetic practice. In Paz, there is a separation
right.
of these things.
Right.
And these two things have to be kept apart.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that, I think, is that Paz belongs to a generation which is completely different from Neruda's. Neruda's is properly the generation that reacts maturely to the Spanish Civil War, which is, of course, the central event of these times.
Mm-hmm.
People have called it the Vietnam of the people who were in their 20s and
right.
30s during the
1930s. Would you agree also? It's interesting to talk about, mention that at this particular point. I've always been fascinated by that conflict. And I'd love to ask you right now, while it's just right in my mind, there's something about that conflict, Enrico, that had an air of intellectual definition about it that no
yes.
other conflict I can think of in
yes.
our time had.
Yes, you're absolutely right, because it was... The Spanish Civil War was really the first international conflict
mm-hmm.
where fascism took a hold. It was the first reaction or the first chapter of what was to become one of the great conflagrations of the 20th century, which was, of course, the Second World War. And so everyone around the world participated in the struggle against fascism at the time. And there was a concerted effort to not only participate in the war, but also to explore in literature
mm-hmm.
its many ramifications, contradictions, reactions, and
the
so
search
forth.
For meaning.
Exactly. The search for meaning that,
mm-hmm.
or the despair at the lack of meaning
right.
that the war brought home.
But your point is that these two men encountered that conflict,
reacted
differently and encountered it in different stages of their
exactly.
lives.
Exactly,
well?
Exactly.
Okay.
Neruda was at least 10 years older than Paz, and that made a crucial difference.
Mm-hmm.
Neruda at that point becomes certainly a committed
mm-hmm.
Poet. Paz was committed, but expressed that commitment in a different way.
Okay.
That is to say, Paz has struggled during 3 years, from 1936 until 1939, against the fascists. But then, all of a sudden, he discovers, along with everyone else, that the politics of the so-called Popular Front are written by some kind of compromise.
Mm-hmm.
And the compromise is the compromise that Stalin and Hitler arrive at in 1939 in their mutual non-aggression
mm-hmm.
pact.
Enrico, this might be a good point for me to break away briefly from our conversation, just to alert listeners everywhere that this program is Radio Dialogue. My guest today is Enrico Mario Santi, professor of Spanish and Latin American literature at Georgetown University. Have we, in fact, now, with this phase and with this episode in his life, gone from the Mexican phase into this second period of your...
Yes. In fact, what we have is that here is the young Paz opening up to the world struggle
mm-hmm.
and then becoming disillusioned with the world struggle. The Popular Front is not the way out of the labyrinth of solitude of the world situation.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, with this disillusionment, Paz begins in a series of breaks, in a series of ruptures. First, it's the political rupture. Second, it's the rupture in his married life. He separates from his wife.
He's about 26 now.
He's about, he's about 27.
Yeah.
He will be, 27, 1941. 1943, he'll be 29. So that he will soon break physically with his immediate surroundings, and he will leave Mexico in 1943 on a Guggenheim Fellowship that will take him to California. They will take him to Berkeley, where he proposes to write, and this is what the Guggenheim proposal says, he proposes to write a book, or at least a long essay, on the theme of America in poetry. That is to say, both North American and Latin American
right.
poetry. And so he goes off to, first he stops off in Los Angeles, and in 1943, in January, when he arrives, Paz no sooner arrives in Los Angeles than he finds himself involved, or at least a witness, to the Pachuco riots. The Pachuco riots, of course, were the Chicano riots of 1943. The Pachucos were the Chicanos in 1943, except that the Pachucos themselves were not aware of themselves as a political force. They were simply Mexican immigrants from the 1930s and 1940s who gathered in Los Angeles. And of course, because of the police brutality and the repression, at the time there were some riots, which impressed the young Octavio Paz in Mexico terribly. And some of these impressions are the ones that are recorded at the beginning, in the first chapter of The Labyrinth of Solitude, you know, the book that he was later to publish in 1950.
Exactly. And let me remark, I recall reading that not once, but a couple of times, albeit some time ago in my own life. I was struck by that essay on the Pachuco. And let me ask you this on this very point. I had the impression, and I'm searching back in dim recesses here, but that he was essentially discovering them in that, he was discovering that Mexicanness in California. In other words, there were people who had, of course, had come from Mexico, but he had not really known them there. This was a manifestation he had not seen before.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. What's interesting, what strikes Paz about the Pachuco is that he sees in the Pachuco one of the extremes to which the Mexican himself or herself can be. Mm-hmm. That is, that the Pachuco may be alienated, but Paz's reflection is goes beyond that. He says the Pachuco may be alienated, but the Mexican himself is alienated. So that when you make the transition between being a Mexican within Mexico to being a Mexican in the United States, really the alienation remains the same, except that it's exaggerated in the case of the Pachuco. The Pachuco knows himself that as a non-American, that is to say, either the Pachuco man or the Pachuco woman rejects being an American. But neither is he Mexican or she Mexican. So that in this, it is in this limbo of identity that he or she, that is to say the Pachuco, finds him or herself. In the case of the Mexican, of course, this is what Paz will begin to meditate upon. And these reflections are the ones that will be gathered in that marvelous book, which is called The Labyrinth of Solitude, which will be the result of this period of, how can we say it? It's a period of isolation, a period of reflection, a period of after the rupture, political rupture, the personal rupture, and the physical or environmental rupture. There's a period of reflection in which Paz is gathering himself, which is to say that between 1943 to 1953, what Paz is doing is that he is accumulating a series of reflections not only on Mexico, as will be reflected in The Labyrinth of Solitude, but also on the poetic experience itself. He will be writing poetry, a very different poetry from the one that he was writing in the first period. If the first period was a period full of echoes of other poets, that is to say, a period of poetry in which Paz's originality was really questionable, it is in this period that we will find a poetry that is at once less angry and also more relaxed. But it's not only relaxed about himself as a person, but also relaxed about the world.
You know, I know he hates, as you told me, the expression find his own voice, but I would love to hear some poetry of this period when he is beginning to express himself in this more definitive personal way.
Well, I've chosen three examples of the kinds of experiences that are being recorded during this period, and I think that what can be gathered in each of these examples is the contemplation, the subjects, that is to say, the speaker's contemplation of life as it is, rather than in any kind of projection of the self onto reality. Life has to be experienced as it is, even though it may mean that the speaker will disappear as a result. That is to say, perception has to be not self-absorbed, but rather has to show an emptiness or a willing emptiness of the self. For example, live interval. Lightning or fishes in the night of the sea, and birds, lightning in the forest night. Our bones are lightning in the night of the flesh. O world, all is night. Life is the lightning. Or, for example, this other one of my favorites, native stone. Light is laying waste the heavens. Droves of dominions in stampede. The eye retreats surrounded by mirrors. Landscapes enormous as insomnia, stony ground of bone. Limitless autumn, thirst lifts its invisible fountains. One last pepper tree preaches in the desert. And now comes the good part. Close your eyes and hear the song of the light. Noon takes shelter in your inner ear. Close your eyes and open them. There is nobody, not even yourself. Whatever is not stone is light. So here, obviously, these are experiences in which the self is contemplating what's out there.
Right.
But the serenity that is being learned in that contemplation is not only an object lesson about what is out there, but also about the self. There's a kind of reconciliation. Pass is learning to reconcile himself with who he is. Here's another one. It's called The Bird. A silence of air, light, and sky. In this transparent silence, day was resting. The transparency of space was silence's transparency. Notice that the recurring themes here are silence and
right.
the transparent. Motionless light of the sky was soothing the growth of the grass. Small things of earth among the stones under identical light were stones. Time sated itself in the minute. And in an absorbed stillness, noon consumed itself. And a bird sang, slender arrow. The sky shivered a wounded silver breast. The leaves moved and grass awoke. And I knew that death was an arrow let fly from an unknown hand, and in the flicker of an eye, we die. Here is the experience first of stillness, then the song of a bird. It triggers a feeling. That feeling is of the fleeting instant, which leads in turn to the thought of death, and at that moment, death is understood.
That's extraordinary.
So these are the kinds of poems that Paz is he's writing, he's experiencing. In other words, first comes the experience, then it is the writing of the poem, and after that is when you can meditate, you can reflect upon that experience.
Right. Enrico, in this way that we have been looking at the periods of Paz's life, as we come to the end of this conversation on him, I guess the sort of obvious question occurs to me, this last 20 years, a bit more than 20 years, 68 to present, and this the marvelous evolution of this man, and what has he been evolving into, and what kind of period he finds himself in now, what phase?
I think that in order to understand what has happened to Paz during the past 20 years or so, it is important to go back to 1968, which is a crucial year in all of our lives. I mean, 68 is when all hell breaks loose, so to speak, everywhere.
Yeah.
Remember that 1968 was also when the Olympics took place in Mexico. And the student movement and the student workers movement, which was extremely powerful in Mexico, and which was protesting both university policy on the part of the government and economic policy on the part of the government, the corruption of the one-party system with which Paz had been associated since 1945, because remember, once again, that he was a bureaucrat and he was working for the government, for the Mexican Foreign Service, staged a massive protest against the Mexican government in October of 1968, using the Olympics as a backdrop and in order to gain international attention. As a result of this, during a meeting in one of the principal plazas of Mexico City, the Plaza of Tlatelolco, there was a gathering of something like 5,000 people. And the police, without any warning, the Mexican police, without any warning, was called in. They immediately staged machine guns on every exit of the plaza, and they started shooting people. The only reliable reports are the ones from the foreign press at the time, mm-hmm. and it was reported that over 400 people had died sure. as a result of the brutality of the Mexican police. These are Mexican police attacking their own peoples. Paz, who from his supposed ivory tower of New Delhi had been following events in the foreign press, immediately reacted to the reports, first of the protest, by communicating with the chancellery in Mexico City, advising restraint and for a dialogue between the government and the students. But immediately after witnessing the brutality, that is to say, hearing about the brutality in the foreign press in New Delhi, Paz had a very clear decision to make, whether he would be associated with the government that killed students, or to break completely with it. And he took the latter course. He resigned his ambassadorship. He began to write against the government. He began to give interviews all over the place, and simply left New Delhi. Since 1968, Paz became an itinerant professor and poet, occupying different distinguished chairs all over the Western world, in Cambridge, at Harvard, at Texas, at Pittsburgh, at the University of California, San Diego, and so forth. And it was only in 1971 that he returned to Mexico with the offer from a leading newspaper, the newspaper Excelsior, to begin editing an arts magazine by the name of Plural. Eventually, Plural went under, but Paz replaced, or rather was able to refinance the magazine as part of a private corporation, the same magazine with a different title by the name of Vuelta. So that from the pages of Vuelta, this new magazine that was published in 1974, Paz has been able to wield an enormous power. Now he's an independent intellectual, and in fact has been advocating precisely that. That is, that the intellectual cannot be at the service of a party, the intellectual cannot be at the service of a government or a faction. The intellectual always must keep one's distance from the prince. So that independence, the independent voice, freedom, the democratic possibility of questioning power, especially when that power is unjust. This is Paz's message nowadays.
Enrico Santi, let me thank you very, very much for this introduction to Octavio Paz. And you know, as we speak, I know you're off to Spain to teach a course with the subject of our conversation.
That's right.
And
that's right.
Can I take this opportunity to invite you back as soon as you get back to talk about...
To let you know how it went, whether I survived.
Exactly. That could be the subject of our next conversation.
I sure will.
But for this one, thank you very, very, very
much. You're very welcome. I'm glad to have been here.
You have been listening to Radio Dialogue. My guest today was Enrico Mario Santi, professor of Spanish and Latin American literature at Georgetown University. I am George Liston-CA, host of Radio Dialogue. Our technical director is John Tyler. Production assistance was provided by Mary Olive Smith. Radio Dialogue is a production of the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Established by Congress in 1968, the center is our nation's official and living memorial to the 28th President of the United States, Woodrow Wilson.
For a cassette copy of this program, or for more information, call the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. That's 1-800-747-7444.
PRI, Public Radio International.